Welcome to the In Hope Podcast, where each Monday we drop a new episode to help strengthen unity in the body of Christ. We want you to be part of the conversation, so make sure you comment, like, share, and follow. I'm your host, Preach. We got a great conversation for you today. Let's get into it. That is something that naturally man's not supposed to be falling out of the egg.
We did not have wings.
Yeah, we don't have wings. So it's not natural for us to fly and, you know, float down to the air. And it's not natural for us to have that view, that perspective, right? To be able to just the scenery that you get, the view that you get. And so I feel like all of that just it provokes awe.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that's one of the reasons we're drawn to those kinds of things. It is
kind of amazing to think that like people never saw that upper view of the earth.
Yeah.
Until like the last, when was the first flights? Not that long ago.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and to get any view like that, it would have had to have been from like this high mountain.
Right? But even that's different.
That's so different.
Like once you've been in a plane, you're like, wow, this is a different view than
exactly
ever anything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've ever experienced.
Yeah. Exactly. Same thing with hot air balloons. You know, when we started, and I
guess those came first.
Dude, I could not do that. Have you ever been in one?
I've never done it. I would do it. I would do it.
I used to be afraid of heights
when I was a kid, but I don't know. At some point, I got over it. Okay. I'm actually a little bit of an adrenaline.
Are you?
Person? Yeah, I'm into like extreme skiing, and I don't look it anymore. But, I like doing somewhat extreme things.
Okay. No, yeah. See,
I don't know that I would bungee jump because it's like, I don't know. There's like that fear of it breaking or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I did jump out of a perfectly good airplane.
Anytime I think of bungee jumping, I think of Fresh Prince and there's an episode on the Fresh Prince where Hillary's fiance dies bungee jump. Spoiler alert, he dies bungee jumping. Yeah,
if you haven't seen it by now,
sorry.
That's a really old show.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Hillary's fiance is proposing to her. He's proposing to her bungee jumping and he dies.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's enough. I bet that scared a lot of people.
Yeah. Out of bungee jumping. So yeah, that's what comes to my mind anytime I think of bungee jumping. So yeah, I won't be doing that one either.
No.
But yeah, even skydiving, I don't know if I could do that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
But yeah, I won't get in a hot air balloon.
I would do it again.
When did you do it?
It was a long time ago. It was right after we got married. So it was probably 20 years ago.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
It was like a few years after we got married.
Okay, I was going to say, was it a honeymoon type of deal?
It was kind of, well, it was an anniversary gift from like my employer.
Okay,
which was kind of cool. Yeah, well, it was like me and him, we worked together in this office, and he was actually training me to possibly take the business, which I didn't end up doing, but he was just a really generous dude. And
it wasn't like one of those, I'm trying to find a good way of get rid of this employee.
Yeah. This guy's terrible. Like, will you please go skydiving?
Right.
No, he was just, he paid for both of us to go. And
that's really cool.
And it was our like fourth or fifth anniversary.
Okay. Nice.
And yeah. And we went and, strapped ourselves to someone else. That's what you do.
Yeah.
You have to do the first time.
Yeah.
And, which is good. Cause then it takes kind of the pressure off. Cause you know, that person's done it a bunch of times.
Exactly.
It is kind of an odd feeling.
I bet.
Strapped to the front of someone else flying through the air. But it was cool. I think the most unique part of it was actually watching my wife go out. Cause she went out first.
Okay.
I was like, well, I hope I get to see her again.
Exactly. You know?
Like she's jumping out of an airplane and I'm like, all right, I'm next.
Ladies
we'll
first.
Hopefully I'll see her at the bottom. And that was probably the scariest part of it. But other than that, you know, we both said afterwards, cause it's not like cliff jumping or something like that,
where
it feels like
jumping,
it feels like falling. Cause it's like, I think it's cause the ground's so close and you can see everything.
Mm-hmm.
When you jump out of an airplane that high, it feels more like flying.
Yeah.
Like it just takes so long and there's so much wind and it's a very different experience than like a cliff jump.
Yeah.
Which I don't like cliff jumping that much.
Okay.
I've done it before. I wouldn't probably do that anymore just because there's more risk for, hitting the water wrong and that kind of stuff. We had a friend hurt her back really bad doing that.
Oh.
And with, you know, you got a parachute and they can slow you down quite a bit before you land. Like we landed real smooth and, In a thing of sand. It was like landing in a sandbox. Nice. Yeah, it was not bad at all.
Okay.
Nice. And the And the same thing, like the view from up there was insane.
Oh, I bet.
And
I bet.
And the first part, you're just like, it's all adrenaline and you're just like flying through the air and like trying to figure out what's going on.
Get your bearings.
But then once they pull the chute, you're just like smooth sailing down and it's really cool. You get a look around and and you're looking down and there's nothing underneath you. That's pretty, that's pretty crazy. Yeah. That was pretty awesome.
Oh man. Now, see, you won't get me doing any of that because I'm that guy. I haven't grown out of it. If anything, I think it's gotten worse as I've gotten older.
Sure.
So when Christmas comes around, putting the lights on and off the house, that is my brush with death every single year.
That's probably more riskier, honestly.
I'm telling you. I mean, I feel like that's going to be the end of me.
I don't like doing that either.
So what's it called? One of my friends, he'll come over. He just walks around like it's nothing because he used to do framing.
Oh, sure.
And he'll say, I'm scared of heights, but you know, I'm used to it.
I always admired those, the high rise workers.
When
you see those videos of them, like just walking
the
iron beam and they're like, no big deal. You're like 40 stories above the
roof. Yeah, exactly. Couldn't do it. No way. There is no way.
Something else.
I've told Christina a couple of times now when I've been up on the roof, I'm like, call the fire department.
And it is different when you have kids too. Like we didn't have kids when we did that.
Uh-huh.
So I'd be a little more worried about doing it, especially together. what if something does happen?
Exactly.
And our kids, like, you know, that would be a bigger deal.
Yep. Nah, I hear that. I hear that. That's why we get life insurance, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. What's it called? We just got Christina a recurve bow for just shooting bow and arrow. And I keep on saying that now that I have life insurance, she can have this.
I don't think you get it if it's that way.
Well, she should, but the kids still should.
Right. Yes. Okay.
Oh, man. So what's it called? We were going to...
Ephesians 4.
Ephesians 4 is what we were going to talk about today. Yes. We were actually going to talk about this last time, and then we just started into a different conversation and kind of just rolled with it. But I think this one, it may not even take that long, but you never know. I mean, me and you, we get to talking and...
Yeah, it'll probably go somewhere else.
Exactly. So I mentioned how in Ephesians 4, we look at Ephesians and has the strong theme of unity within Christ throughout the book of Ephesians.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first three chapters, he's really setting this picture of what it means to be saved by Christ, what it means to be brought into the family of God, the blessings that we inherit and all these different things. And, you know, what we've been saved from. He gives us a good picture of, look, you were dead in sin. Now you're alive in Christ. You were a child of disobedience and a follower of Satan. Now you're a child of God and a follower of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you were subject to your flesh, to the passions of your mind and your body. And now you're subject to the will of God. So he's kind of breaking this picture down for us of what it means to have been brought into the kingdom of God. And then in Ephesians 4, he says, therefore, I, a prisoner of the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of your calling. And so there's this whole concept of walking worthy of this calling to which we have been called, is what he says.
Yeah.
And and in that, I mean, his very first admonishment is to, with all patience and bearing with one another in love, seek unity.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's this strong unity theme, as we said, all throughout. But this concept of walking worthy, I'm one of those, and I feel like most people fall on one or two sides of the spectrum here. You have one side of the spectrum that can say, well, God knows my heart. And then it kind of gives us, and that's a true statement. So don't think I'm... Like, God knows our hearts, absolutely. But I think sometimes that can be taken as, well, God knows our heart, and we don't put forth as much effort.
Yeah.
Because we're looking with the fact that we have good intention or we have, you know, and that type of thing. And so we're not striving. Which one of the things that he says is to be eager, right? And that's a striving, making every effort type of deal. So he says to be eager. So we can either fall on this side of God knows my heart, I'm not striving, or mm-hmm. we go all the way to this other spectrum of where we, and I feel like sometimes this is where my vocabulary can push. Mm-hmm. That's not usually where my mindset is, but my vocabulary can push. And maybe it's just because I feel challenged to move a little more in this direction, maybe. which is that idea of like, we need to work. We need to do these things. We need to do, yeah. we need to do. And so you kind of have this, and I mean, obviously we see this battle within scripture, right? It works is by faith alone, and then show me
salvation
your faith.
Is by faith,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yes, yeah. But salvation by faith alone, and then show me your faith by your works, right? right? And then so yeah. you have that dichotomy totally. Or that, you know, that back and forth, mm-hmm. and all throughout scripture, you're going to get time and time again this push of doing the will of God and following yeah. command and a lot of do things, and then there's that balance end of it. So that's why I feel like we. The other side of it, where it is by faith, we can't really earn anything.
Yeah.
And so
but we are called to righteousness,
yes. right? And so there's this back and forth. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of us will end more on one side of the spectrum than the other.
Yeah.
Right. So when it comes to this and this idea of, hey, walking worthy, a lot of my vocabulary, a lot of times when I talk about it, I know, for example, even at this conference, when we were talking about this, it may have sounded like I'm saying, you need to get out there and you need to work. Like you need to do, yeah. do, mm-hmm. right?
You need to do.
Yeah, you need to do.
We call that the do cycle. Because sometimes we can get caught in that, right?
Yeah.
So you're like, there's an extreme where God is calling us to do. He yeah. is calling us to be the light.
Yeah.
He's calling us to be the salt.
And that means
like
shining.
All those things
yeah,
are doing
that means,
something.
Yeah, exactly.
But also not to get so wrapped up in the doo-doo cycle, as we
exactly.
sometimes call it.
That I like that. Doo-doo cycle.
That we lose sight of love
yeah.
and those things.
Yeah.
Like, right? Because sometimes that can overtake. Mm-hmm. And we find all of our value and purpose in what we're doing versus being a child of God, right?
Exactly.
So he is calling it to us, but it's not the main thing.
No, right?
But it is like the purpose. I always think of this like, sure, we get saved and we could sit there in that and like, mm-hmm. we're saved because of our faith.
Exactly.
And, but we are purposeful beings. Like God made us for purpose. Yeah. He made us to follow our calling that yeah. he has on our lives and be a part of the story that he's made, which is really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is where purpose comes in and we desire that.
Yeah.
And if we're not doing anything, we're missing out on half of what he gave to us.
Exactly. Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I believe that. Yeah, he does call it in it, but it can become a cycle. And
right.
and that's where you see burnout and stuff too.
Absolutely.
People get so stuck in the do cycle that they're not getting the rest.
Right.
Or the, because he does call us to rest too.
Exactly.
Like that's what the Sabbath is about.
Yeah.
So it's not do all the time.
Right.
It's I'm going to give you things mm-hmm. to give you purpose and something to do,
yeah.
but also rest in me and I'm still the primary.
Exactly.
Spend time with me, relationship with me.
Yeah.
Those kind
yeah.
of things.
Yeah. And I feel like that's looking at that Sabbath, just even that cycle, I feel like is a good way of looking at this and that there's both the doing and the being, right? Mm-hmm. Your doing comes from your being. Right. So being is the higher priority.
Yes.
Being the child of God. Right. Who you are. That character development is the higher priority. The doing comes from that.
It's the overflow.
It's the overflow of yeah. it. But if you're not seeing any overflow, then there's an issue. Right. With the being.
Right.
And then so you
this
have
comes first.
Right. Yeah. And so I think even within the Sabbath, it's kind of built in because you have 6 days of work. Mm-hmm. Right? 6 days of due. But even in the midst of those days, you should be working from your being.
Moments.
Right? Yeah. You should be working even in those 6 days from your being. And so while you're work, and you're putting in hard work those 6 days, the being, you should be doing that from who you are and from your place yeah. of being. And just in case we're overdoing that, right? And we're losing sight, we have this whole day where it says, no, you're not allowed to do anything.
Yeah. Just be.
Just be.
With me.
Right? Just be.
Not
yeah,
just
exactly.
Just be with me.
Yeah,
me,
exactly.
That's what God is saying, yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that kind of, it calls us to this balance. And if if we're not careful, then we'll just want to be, and then we'll say, okay, I'll work one day. yeah. Right. And if we're not careful, we can also go to the other side where we're going 7, 8, 10, 21, yeah, 30 way days too much. Of yeah. work and no be. Right. When we're supposed
to. That's not sustainable.
And it's not sustainable.
And God knows that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's one of my favorite lines is where Jesus says the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath.
Made for man.
Right. And the fact that it was made for us means that it's good for us. Right. There's benefit. We cannot really, like you said, it's not sustainable. We can't keep going on without that.
Right.
And so
there's a really good tool we had in our discipleship track that we had at our church. And it was the rest. It was a rest teaching on like why we should rest. Mm. And one of the things we always said was work from rest, not rest from work. Mm. So you can go the way where like I'm gonna burn myself out on work.
Yeah.
And then so I'm then exhausted.
Yeah.
And then I'll rest. And just like what we just said a minute ago is no, I need to like get all the rest and filling of God and like let his spirit be the energy that I pull from. And then do the work and then do it again.
Yeah.
Not burn yourself out.
That's cool. Because
it's not sustainable. No. It's not God's model, I don't think.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So when we're looking at this idea of walking worthy, I think it's good to emphasize walking worthy does not mean you're doing so much that now you're worthy of this call that you've been given. Now you're worthy of being, you know, being part of this kingdom and being called alive in Christ and being made brand new. And it's not that you're working so much or doing so much that now you're worthy. It's not an earning of the worthiness. Walking worthy is more, I feel like, on the other end of we're walking and we're doing these things because this new life in Christ that we've been given, that we live in, is worthy of it. Right.
Yeah.
This being a child of God and our Father is worthy of it. And, you know, the will of God that we're now subject to instead of the flesh and the passions of our hearts and our minds and our bodies, this will of God is worthy of me walking this way. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really important. Just in the sense of we walk worthy, not to make ourselves worthy. We walk worthy, but because the call to which we've been called is worthy of us walking that way. The Father is worthy of us walking that way. Unity within the body is worthy of us walking that way, is the way that I think of it. Does that make sense? I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. And I mean, he's calling us to be more like him.
Yeah.
And that takes effort. And
absolutely.
And if we want it to be the things that he's calling us into, which is the light and the salt and all those things, we have to start working towards that righteousness that he calls us to.
Yeah.
And he's going to meet us along the way. And again, like we don't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
But we do want to strive for Christlikeness because it's all the things that God calls us to are good.
Mm-hmm.
And there's blessing within it.
Absolutely.
And so he knows that. And he's not calling it to us just to make us little perfect carbon copies or whatever. But he's calling us to us because he knows that that's actually what's best for us.
Yeah.
And like if you look at the Ten Commandments and the things we're not supposed to do, it's like those things are all bad for you.
Yeah.
Like they just are. Like lying is bad for you. Coveting is bad for you. All these things are bad for you. It's not rules for sake of rules. It's rules for sake of you.
Yeah.
To help you become a better person.
Yeah.
Like you'll like yourself more.
Yeah.
If you follow and work towards righteousness.
Yeah. Man, that reminds me of my daughter asked one of the most brilliant questions. The other day she asked me, we were talking, she brought up how we're not supposed to worship things or people or make people, you know, force people to obey us or worship us. She's like, so why does God make us worship him or tell us to worship him? And so I
was like, man, it's a good question.
That's such a good question. Like, why is it wrong, right, for us to expect worship or obedience, right? From one another sometimes. And then, but it's okay for God to say, hey, let you have to worship me, right? And to command that. Mm-hmm. And so we just kind of walked through it and talked about, well, would it be good for where we use, you know, her sister, or I said for mom or dad or your mm-hmm. sister as an example, you know, if would it be good for us, you, or anyone else if we forced you to worship us, or if we were telling you to worship us, like you worshiping us, will that help me or will that help you? In any way, right? Mm-hmm. And you can, maybe you can find some, you know, there's some short benefits of those type of things. Like it'll feel good, right? It's good for me because then now you're going to be doing my laundry for me and stuff like that, right? so it frees up my time. But outside of that, when we start looking at it, we're realizing, okay, but we're not meant for worship. When mankind gets worshiped, when we get worshiped, when people get worshiped, mm-hmm. we usually end up going off the rails.
Yeah.
And usually end up causing hurt and harm.
Well, we're not God, so.
Exactly.
We will go straight to pride and, mm-hmm. and different things. And there's not really much we can do for the people that worship us.
No.
If they're worshiping us.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to be able to provide for you what God can provide for you.
Mm. Nope.
And so, you know, he's the creator of the universe, and that's
there we go.
He's got a better resume than we do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Right. And then we even started getting into that. I was talking about how, you know, does daddy give you air to breathe? Like, did I create you? Did I give you air to breathe? Did I, like,
sure, I provided you life, but it was through the creation.
Exactly. Right.
That gave me the ability to do that.
Exactly.
He's still a big guy. Yeah.
So it's kind of, we start going down and we're just kind of talking about, well, no, yeah. So we working our way through that conversation, you know, we're just realizing, I just thought it was so brilliant that she asked that. Mm. Cause it really does come back to the fact of, well, he's the one that's worthy of it.
Yeah.
And like you said, because he's the one that's actually worthy of it, it is good for us to live in that posture and to express that posture. And it is good for him. It would be wrong for him, so to speak, right? It would be wrong if he withheld us from that type of relationship to him. Like, that would be harmful for us.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't be harmful for him. He'll be fine. So I guess you can't say it'd be wrong for him.
Right.
But it would be... like he'll be fine. He's good. But but us, like, it would be harmful for us to be withheld from that relationship with him. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, he's doing us a favor by saying, hey, you can worship me.
And you could be in a relationship with me.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Right. And so what you said just reminded me of that. And I feel like that kind of, again, it just works right back into this idea of walking worthy is about him being worthy, about the call being worthy, about what he's calling us to. It's worthy of those, the effort and the manner in which Paul is really encouraging us to walk, you know, being eager to maintain unity, bearing with one another in love. And then you see him, especially in Ephesians 5, he starts getting into, you know, husbands, love your wives like Christ loved the church. Mm-hmm. And later in Ephesians 6, you have him talking about the armor of God, right? And so you have all these little things that often we'll look to and we'll point out and we'll talk about within just even the book of Ephesians alone. And all of this really does tie back into this idea of, like, this is the manner in which you're meant to walk. This is part of being eager to maintain the unity, mm-hmm. Which is just expressed more and more through those things. It's beautiful.
Along those lines, you're talking about unity through that. And one thing that came up for me as I was reading through it before we came is how that could be misused.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just wanted to bring up this part of unity oftentimes can be used in the sake of, well, you just need to comply.
Mm-hmm. Compliance.
Compliance.
Uniformity.
Uniformity.
Yeah.
Don't make any noise about anything. And I just wanted to clarify that that's not what Paul is calling. In fact, if you look at Paul's letters, he's constantly corrected. Constantly.
Yes. And,
but he's also promoting unity in that. So what does that look like? And there is the model that Jesus gave us. If you have a problem with your brother, and he's very much for unity, but unity comes through discussion.
Yeah.
Unity comes through dealing with problems in the church. And and confrontation.
Yeah.
And that took me a really long time to learn because I'm not a confrontational person naturally. And so this has been like a more recent revelation for me is like, because I was very much like, just let it go. Like that's unity, right?
Yeah.
Not getting into conflict is unity, right? And that is just not true.
Yep.
Because what happens oftentimes with that is that you end up with gossip, right? Because I'm not going to deal with this conflict directly, but I'm going to kind of like start talking about it to the other people in the church and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Which that's where the actual disunity comes from is the inability to go through conflict with people within the church. Mm. And so when he calls us to that truth, he says, with love and truth and, you know, seeking it, that's an effort, right?
Yeah.
We got to put effort into that, going to people when there's a problem, or if someone teaches wrong. We talked about this in one of the previous podcasts. We're not going to always get it right. And someone coming to you, and then there's a humbleness factor of us being able to be willing to be corrected. Yeah. And then going through that process with someone, and it says correct in private, not in public. That's good. So, you know, taking that person aside and going, hey, this is something I'm seeing. Like, can we talk through this and how that's biblical or not biblical? And working through those conflicts in that way. And I've definitely been in conflicts that were not held that way and other ones that were. And it's way better to go through conflict with someone and actually do it in love. Like, come to them, say, hey, this is what I saw. I'd love to work with you on that and kind of just see how we can maybe adjust that a little bit.
Yeah.
And they may not receive it. And then there's like an order of things that I'm going to look it up really quick if anyone wants that order.
It's
in Matthew 18 where he talks about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he talks about if your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault just between the two of you. If they listen to you, you have won them over. So that's great. But he is calling us to do that. Like, bring out those faults. But if they will not listen, take one or two others along so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. And if they still refuse to listen, tell it to the church. And if they refuse to listen even to the church, treat them as you would a pagan or a tax collector. which is kind of, he's telling us like, it's important.
Yeah.
And if someone's not willing to be corrected at all, and especially when you bring in more people, because you might be wrong in your correction too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why he asks us to do it in community together. Yeah. If we can't work it out individually, you kind of work your way up the line. And I've seen this happen in our church, and it's a powerful thing to work through conflict.
Absolutely.
And so I'm no longer the person that doesn't want to work through conflict, which is great. That was something God really had to change my heart on.
That's so good.
And so I just wanted to bring that up as unity is not always just going with the flow.
No.
And just being like, okay, that's fine. I'm just going to not be a noisemaker. Mm-hmm. You could be a noisemaker. There's a right way to do it, though.
Exactly.
Right? It's not going around talking to everybody in the church about what you disagree with. The pastor said, you know, that's not the right way to do it. That's not what we're called to. That's the disunity piece, right, that you see where we're called to. The call to unity is to do it in love.
Exactly.
And so don't not do correction, but do it in a loving way where you're talking to the person that has wronged you or that you feel like has said something wrong, and then working your way through that process that he gave us there in Matthew.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The heart, the intention behind it, I feel like is big, which we have to make sure that we have that in line with scripture.
Yeah.
And in line even with this desire for unity, right? Which does not mean uniformity. It doesn't mean we're always going to agree.
Yeah, it's not unity and uniformity are not the same thing.
Exactly. With that, what you were saying, it made me think, and I was over here looking, I was like, man, what is the title of this book? I've recommended it. I've recommended it to people multiple times, and I just could not remember because I had the term conflict in my head. And but that's not in the title. But the book is called Crucial Conversations.
Oh, I've heard of
You've
that.
Heard of it?
I haven't
so
read it,
good.
But I think my wife has actually, because she's really big in the conflict management as well.
Yeah. So this is a really good book. What's it say? It's Crucial Conversations, Tools for Talking When Stakes Are High. And I feel like this is such a good book. If I could, let me see. Oh, there's a few authors, so I'm not about to read all their names. Crucial Conversations, such a good book. And it really gets into that. And one of the biggest things that they pull out time and time and time and time again is knowing the end goal. Mm-hmm. Like knowing that end goal and that you guys are working towards that end goal together.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, with that, that takes honesty and transparency, right?
And humility.
And humility, right? Because
that's a big one.
Yeah. For example, I mean, if we're talking about, you know, a disagreement and we're mm-hmm. working our way through the steps, right? If your end goal is really your end goal is to get rid of the other person, that's not a shared end goal.
No, definitely right? not. Yeah.
If your end goal is, you know, to make sure that they apologize and say you were right, like to prove yourself right, then that's not going to be a shared
then you
end
have
goal.
A pride issue.
Then
right?
you have a pride issue. Exactly. Yeah. Which is why we need to be able to be honest
yeah.
about where that end goal is. And that's where having that conversation, you know, with one another and then inviting two others in. It's mm-hmm. you have to be transparent in this.
Yeah.
And those people who you're inviting in, you're not just supposed to invite in, you know, any two random people.
No.
They're supposed to be people who are wise
yeah.
and led by the Spirit themselves, have some discernment that, you know, they, yeah. maybe they'll be able to spot the fact that, hey, maybe you need to, you know, pull back on the pride piece here.
Right. Well, and that's what I think like elders are kind of
yeah,
responsible for, right?
Exactly.
Those church leaders that are around the pastor to help.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it might be a problem with the pastor. You don't know.
Yeah.
But the pastor is probably usually the yeah. first one if it's between members of the church.
Absolutely.
But then you take it to the church eldership
yeah.
and other people that are well-versed in mm-hmm. how to deal with conflict.
Exactly.
And maybe like a conflict manager.
Yeah.
There might be people in your church that can do that specifically.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like that's what my wife's trained in.
Absolutely.
So like she's a great person to bring into those kind of conversations because she's very good at, you need that like third party.
Yeah.
Hopefully not someone that's too yoked to one of the people.
Exactly.
Right? So you yeah. want it to be, what's the word I'm looking for?
Someone who's more mutual.
Mutual. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's another word I was looking for, but yeah,
okay.
like not weighed one side or the
yeah.
other.
Yeah.
And so they can look at everything and be like, okay, yeah, I can see both of your guys' viewpoints mm-hmm. and here's a way forward.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And then it maybe it does continue to grow in how many people are involved, depending on how big of a issue it is.
Yeah.
But, and I feel like most cases you can work it out, just the two of you.
Yeah,
if you
most
do it.
Cases. Yeah,
if you're
doing
go
it
through
right.
the process of sitting down and going like, "This hurt me," or "This wrong happened,"
mm-hmm.
One of the other, there's another Bible verse that says, you know, don't let the sun go down on your anger.
Yeah,
and you hear about that a lot with spouses.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's
yeah.
true though. Like a lot of times, what happens is people just stew too long on things, and
yeah.
that's what causes the disunity.
Exactly.
Instead of just going and dealing with it right
yeah.
away.
Yeah.
And that was me for so
yeah.
many years.
Mm. Nah, yeah, I hear you. And it's putting it out there. And it may not even mean that, okay, we're going to come to a complete resolution.
Yeah.
You know, with,
it's just
with
a starting point.
Yeah, but you at least get to a healthy starting point.
Yeah.
You at least, you know, get the thoughts out there. You start the conversation and you go from enemies to, okay, maybe we're not seeing eye to eye, but
mm-hmm.
we're at least, we know we're aiming towards the same goal. And where it's a work in progress.
Yeah.
Right. So with that, something, what you just brought up, it also made me think there was another book that just came to my mind that you just made me think of.
There's a lot of good books.
There's a lot of good books out there. Oh, it may, what's it called? So, there's an author named John Bevere. One of his okay. very early books, that he wrote that was one of his first big books. It was called The Bait of Satan.
Mm.
And really what that is dealing with offense.
Yeah.
And us feeling offended and being offended. And so this kind of gets into, you know, our willingness to display mercy and
yeah.
grace, especially in the face of conflicts. I think that's really big.
Yeah.
Because we
it's
need
huge. To, because here's the deal. You're going to go to church and there's this idea like, well, I'm around a bunch of Christians. I'm not going to get offended ever.
Yeah.
And that's just not reality, right? We're people, you know, like people are going to offend you.
Yeah.
I've said things because I'm not in a good, healthy state
yeah.
and I've hurt people
yeah.
and I had to go back to them and be like, I'm sorry I did that.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to be a good Christian
exactly.
and not do that. But like, I'm still a person that goes through emotional challenges mm-hmm. or financial challenges or whatever.
Or theological challenges.
I mean,
you look
or
at
I'm
the
struggling
apostles.
With my faith at certain
yeah.
times in my life. And there's this whole wide range of people
yeah.
going to any church and in leadership too. And and they're going to do things that aren't always perfect. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're called to like mercy and grace and, and being able to walk through those things with people. But just know that that's going to happen. And that's where the, you know, that's where a lot of the church hurt words come from.
Absolutely.
But how many times could church hurt be avoided if like we would have actually talked it out with the person?
Exactly.
Because a lot, I think church hurt happens because conflict never gets resolved.
Yeah,
people just leave.
Yeah.
Go to another church.
Never gets addressed
many
at
times.
All. Not even
doesn't
just
get,
resolved.
Like, even
doesn't even get brought up.
Oh yeah, totally. I'm just not going to deal with it because it's easier to not deal with it. But that's where disunity happens.
Exactly.
Because then, and then you take it to your next church, and then it might even become like a gossip thing there, right? Because it never got worked out.
Exactly.
And so that's where bigger disunity happens within the church. Yeah. I think is not working through conflict.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's so good that you said, look, all of us within the church, we're all flawed people. We all have our issues and we're all going to cause offense. Yeah. You can look at the apostles, they caused offense, right?
How many times do we cause offense in our own families, right?
Right. Exactly.
Like,
right.
I love everybody in my family, but I still cause offense.
And we're meant to be a family, right? We're meant to be the family of God. All right?
Yeah. So we're meant to be a bigger family,
right?
As a whole.
So yep. There's going to be some offending going on there.
Yes.
And so you can look at, and I want to bring up the apostles first, because like us, sometimes the offense that was caused wasn't because they were right and they were correcting people who were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like sometimes it's no, we made mistakes.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think we need to recognize that first and foremost, that sometimes we can make mistakes and mistakenly cause offense.
Yeah.
At other times, you saw the apostles and you definitely saw Jesus appropriately cause offense.
Yeah. Well, actually I was just reading Corinthians and Corinthians 2, Paul, I don't think I ever caught this before. He actually apologizes for his first letter.
Uh-huh.
He's like, I'm sorry I offended you.
Yeah.
But also I'm glad that you kind of came to realization that what I was telling you was just for correction.
Uh-huh.
Like, but he did recognize it and he apologized for it, even though it was right.
Exactly. Right. And
but that's the humility piece, right?
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Yeah. You could definitely come to one of those meetings without humility too. And then that becomes just as much of a problem.
Yeah. No, if you come to those meetings, you address those situations without humility, it's very, 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 very unlikely that's going to end well.
Right.
That a good result is going to come from that.
Yeah.
Cause even if the other person is completely humble, and I've known some of these people, completely humble and will just let you walk right over their back, then you move forward with a pride issue. And it's likely only going to grow and cause more hurt and harm. Because where pride is allowed to thrive within a church, it just becomes cancerous.
Mm. Yeah.
So, and you don't want to be that cancerous person.
No.
And unknowingly, most of the time it's unknowingly, right?
The cancer of pride in my church. That's
right?
A good statement.
So it's, and I think it's tough because a lot of times it's unknowingly. A lot of times we can look at people within scripture and we see that sometimes they feel like they are absolutely right and they feel like they're doing the work of God.
I've been that person.
Right. And I think we all can. And so that's why we need to be able to have those conversations. And this is why we're not supposed to walk in our faith walk alone. This is why we're supposed to have brothers and sisters who can speak to us openly and truthfully with love and truth and correct us. And that's why we're supposed to resolve conflicts. If we can't do it just one-on-one, we're supposed to do this within group, within relationship. All this is meant to be happening within healthy relationship where people are honest and able to talk with each other openly. And that
and
will...
different personality types.
Yeah.
Because Ephesians 4 is also, I told you this last time, that's where he lists out the five kind of like giftings that he gives us. Uh-huh. And we're all supposed to work together within those giftings to do things. And part of that's going through conflict.
Exactly.
And part of that will cause conflict.
Because
you got these two giftings that are on opposite ends of the spectrum as far as like what they're doing. And they don't always get along and see eye to eye on direction for the church and all those kind of things. And that's on purpose, I think.
I think
we talked about that. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
You got the people going out and like, I want to reach the next generation and do all this. And sometimes they can leave everybody else behind. The other ones are like, can get stuck just ministering to the same people the rest of their life.
Yeah.
And so you need that back and forth, but it creates conflict.
It creates conflict. And I think a great word for it is tension. Like it creates tension, right?
Holy tension.
Tension that causes us to grow stronger, right? Like you can't grow stronger without tension. I was at the gym the other day.
You can't grow.
Yeah, you can't grow, right? Like with no tension, you're not gonna grow. Butterfly's not gonna spread its wings, right? Like you're not gonna literally grow in height. You have to have those growth pains, right? There's going to be tension. Yeah. You're not gonna get stronger without that tension.
Do you learn more through? Conflict or peace?
Exactly.
Like peace, we could just sit and get really lazy and not grow at all.
Man. See, now you're about to.
Well, that's even true,
you're about
right?
to make me
that's,
look something up.
Go ahead, look now. Something up. Oh, man. I'll say something about that. You know, that's true in the business world as well, right? So they know that like failure is where new innovation takes things move forward through, and you could call that conflict, you know, through struggle. All the big business owners that you know, like Apple and all those things, they all went through a number of failed businesses and struggle to get to where they were.
Yeah.
And there's something in that there's growth in the struggle.
Absolutely.
And that's true of conflict within the church. That's true of seeking unity and all that stuff. There's growth in the struggle of trying to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. See, that just made me think I had to look this up just to prove me and you wrong. I wanted to look this up.
Prove it.
Because I think we're way off the mark here. See, because in Romans 5, chapter 3, Paul, the same guy that we're talking about, you know, wrote Ephesians, whatnot. He says, not only that, but we rejoice in your peace and comfort, knowing that peace and comfort produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope.
I see what you're doing here.
But in actuality,
what does it actually say?
Actually, he says, not only that, but we rejoice in your sufferings.
Yeah.
The tension, right? The struggle that produces endurance, which produces character, which produces hope.
We're supposed to learn something in all of this,
right?
Right.
Man,
we're not meant to just sit around and twiddle our thumbs and be happy.
And all think the exact same way, all want to do the exact same thing. And I feel like if God really did want us to be, when he talks about us being of one accord and, you know, being of one mind and one heart, if he really meant that he wanted us all to think, act, and do the exact
same,
then I think he would have
just programmed us that way.
Would have programmed us that way, or at least set a structure in place that was highly, highly
rigid,
dictated, and rigid to where it was okay. We see now. I'm about to cause some offense. Okay.
It's okay. Just call us. We'll talk through it one-on-one.
But
we'll go through the model. Like, we just talked about it. We know what to do.
I think he would have put in place something to where he would have said, okay, look, you know, I'm the head. So everyone's going to think and do exactly what like I'm going to do. And I'm going to make it clear. And so maybe I'm not going to be here. So if I'm not going to be here, I'm going to talk to this one person. And everybody has to follow and listen and think and act just like this one person.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I feel like if that was the case, if he was going to say, you have to be of one mind, which means y'all have to think alike, agree, and do the same things. Mm-hmm. And this person's going to dictate that.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you bring more than two people together, there's going to be some kind of difference, right? but
it's working together.
It's working together
through those differences that makes it actually really beautiful,
it
right?
It is.
Like that's the most beautiful thing about a marriage over time.
Yeah.
Is that you guys complement each other usually and you start working together to achieve something greater than you could on your own.
Exactly.
And you know, I was just thinking this as you were saying that, like God gave us creativity for a reason.
Come on,
and I kind of just wonder if he just like rejoices in that. Like,
right?
Isn't that awesome? Like, think about when your kid does something that you maybe didn't teach them, but they're super creative. I know it's like my daughters are both, they're super, both really creative and they just do things randomly. And I'm like, that is so cool.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to like rejoice in that a little
bit. Exactly.
And it's not my doing this. It's not my doing, but it's just cool to be a part of. And I love that. And I feel like that's how God probably is with us.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like he gave us that ability to be creative.
Yeah.
And everybody's creative in their own way. Like even if you think you're not a creative person, like creative in the way, like my son's more of a basketball player. He says he's not creative all the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, you are. Mm-hmm. Like I look at the way he does certain things and I'm like, that was creative. That was you being creative.
Exactly.
And it's not, you're not creative in the sense that we look at creative as like art and music and those kind of things.
You have to paint something or write something.
There's creative ways to do business. There's creative, there's creative way to do accounting and, you know, there's that you see in engineering.
Yeah.
Like that. There's a ton of creativity in engineering where they might not consider themselves a creative person, but they are being creative.
Absolutely.
And I think God rejoices in that.
I absolutely agree. I have to agree with that.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. I think we're up on time, but I feel like we hit the nail a couple of times.
That's good.
And I like where the conversation went here. It, again, like he was saying, hit us up. We may have caused some offense.
I will meet you.
Right? But we always want to encourage to be part of the conversation, right? Yeah. Be part of the conversation. So that means, you know, hit us up, write, DM on, don't slide into my DMs, but DM.
What's that mean?
Another conversation. But what's it called? But yeah, so time is up, but definitely be part of the conversation. We want to hear from you and consider being a ministry partner as well. Yeah. Consider being a ministry partner. Help keep these things going. I think we're going to touch a little bit even more on that in the next conversation, because I think next conversation we're talking about barriers.
Yeah.
Barriers. So definitely thank you guys so much for just giving us your time. We do appreciate it. We value it. And again, we want to hear from you. So be part of the conversation, and we'll see you next week when we talk about those barriers. Thank you for joining us for the In Hope podcast. Hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Remember, we want you to be part of the conversation. So comment, like, share, and follow. Also, we want you to consider being a ministry partner with us. For as little as $2 a month, you can help continue this podcast and other ministries that teach about unity and invest in collaborative efforts. Connect with us via social media throughout the week, and we look forward to seeing you next week on Monday on the In Hope podcast.